I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.
You used to start fires. You used to start fires. Now I'm burning my own body down. You start fires. You start fires.
Today, I'll start with a prediction. This will be Here's the Thing's most downloaded episode of 2020. This show is usually my way of taking you into the lives and careers of giants, people at the top of their mountain looking down. Today, our guests are at the base of the mountain looking up. Purda is at a thrilling moment for any great band. This track is called From Fire, and it's the only song they've released. In the Beatles timeline, it's after the Casbah Coffee Club, but before George Martin. They're represented by William Morris, but the frontman still works at Starbucks. They had a profile in Paper Magazine, but the guitarist's mom drove them to our interview. Purda's frontman is Matt Bazulka, and there are only a handful of people in a generation with his talent and stage presence. Within a year, maybe two, you will know his name. But joined by the band's founder, Colin Kenrick, in a small L.A. studio for our conversation, he's still just a normal kid. Well, not normal, exactly. Something his parents accommodated.
I wanted to perform since I was very young. They had me trying different sports out, and then one day during a wrestling match, I got, like, flipped over and lost a tooth, and they were like, maybe we should try the art.
And funny. Yeah, Where'd you grow up?
Pennsylvania, like rural Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
It's called the Lehigh Valley. Yeah, it's a small collection of towns. I remember I made, like, the front page of the newspaper when I was 8 years old because I was the only male dancer in, like, the entire valley.
Well, when I listened to you, this is when you were at the gig at the Troubadour. Where's the one where you're wearing the white?
Oh, that's Moroccan Lounge. Yeah, with the fringe.
He knows all the outfits.
Well, of course he does it. But how could it be otherwise? And I'm sitting there watching, and you stand up. You, like, make an entrance, even though you're already there. You stand up, and I'll let you describe it. I don't want to say it's Elvis. I don't want to say it's Cher. That white jumpsuit split open to the navel, the fringes. I'm going, look at this guy.
It originally was not actually to the navel. They didn't have the air conditioning.
Yeah. And you open your mouth, and I thought I was going to pass out. Did you train?
I mean, I took a year of lessons when I was, like, 11.
Whose idea was it?
My mom.
And you left there when you were how old?
Right after I graduated high school.
To go where?
Here, to Cal Arts.
And you knew?
Well, that's the thing is, it's like, I have this kind of ignorance is bliss way about, like, finding things in life. And I just kind of followed this one teacher that I really trusted. She's like, there's this school called Cal Arts that I think you'll really love. I had never even been to the West Coast. I hadn't even really traveled. My first day in California was my first day of school.
Did you like it right away?
Yeah,
I
loved it.
You feel at home right away.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was a weirdo in high school, so I felt like I fit right in. Yeah, and for training, I mean, like, I went for acting. So the voice training that they did was for speech and distinction.
More like theater.
Yeah.
Voice training for the theater. Right. And for you, I'm talking to Colin Kenrick now. For you, what was music in your life as a child? Like, what did you listen to? Were you rapidly into music? You know, what's your musical DNA?
So music was the connection to my dad. I was raised on the classic songwriters, you know, Paul Simon, Bob Dylan.
Where'd you grow up?
Local LA kid in the suburbs. And growing up with my dad, I remember him showing me a Dylan song when I was 13.
What song?
It was Spanish Boots of Spanish Leather by Bob Dylan. And that was a song that, it was like a sailor song. And for some reason, the story really spoke to me. And then when I started playing music—
You picked up a what?
I picked up a guitar.
You did?
I picked up a guitar and fumbled through some chords. So I started with that, and I eventually moved on to, you know, people like Elliott Smith, just kind of the classic songwriters, really angsty. That was my bag. So shifting this project, it's very much away from what I used to write, because it's not really
our
sound. You wrote? In my bedroom.
How old are you now?
I'm 26.
Right.
Right.
Then wait, did you have another band before this band?
High school bands, you know, nothing to, you know, nothing to write home about.
Someone's laughing mockingly at your past. You know,
it's not me. No, they're wonderful. The videos on YouTube.
Oh, no, we're not talking about this.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
Those super
angsty. Until I get home.
Yeah. So I went to school for this, and I started doing songwriting, and wasn't really sure what I wanted to do when I left.
Where'd you go to school?
We both went to CalArts, the California Institute of the Arts,
right,
up in Valencia, California. Great place. And
did you meet there?
Sort of.
We knew each other.
We were in one class, I remember.
Yeah. I don't even remember that class.
Because you were high or because you were wrong?
It was an art school, so
and
both.
It was a science, quote-unquote, class.
Right. But what about music of your generation beyond the Beatles and Simon & Garfunkel, whatever? What did you listen to? What did you love?
Oh, man. I don't know if there's anything I really loved.
Seriously.
I think it was just a matter of influence for me from, you know, where I was receiving music from, you know, mostly my dad and kind of his group of friends. And
so you were raised on something else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what was this music of your generation? What was it missing as far as you were concerned?
I think it really was missing the storytelling, the structure of a song explaining a story, whereas it just felt like, and even more so now, about the hooks and the catchiness and the repetitiveness.
Yeah. What's the first time that you sang? This is always intriguing to me because I had this wonderful conversation with Tom York about this. Mm. I mean, Tom York sits here with me in our studio in New York and says, you know, that he hated his voice. He didn't think he could sing.
And mean as well.
When did you first, how old were you and where were you when people first said to you, you could do this? Were you in the bathroom in like a Cher outfit with a brush in your hand doing Do You Believe in Love After Love or whatever that song
Cher
is?
Cher wasn't my diva. I mean,
no.
Of course, you know, honor and respect her. But yeah. Britney Spears was so embarrassing. It's not. I love it so
much. No, it's perfect. It's perfect. So Oops, I Did It Again in the bathroom with a hairbrush.
Actually, I distinctly remember I got her CD. Oh, God, I think it was the second one. I wanted it so bad for Christmas. And my grandma bought it for me, but she handed it the way she handed it to me. So how we did is we unwrapped gifts and then we went up and had to say thank you. So I like unwrapped the gift and I was just saying thank you. And she's like, oh, that trash. And my mom just yelled from the other room, he likes what he likes.
Leave him alone.
Always, my whole childhood. My mom being like, leave him alone. Yeah, I don't know.
But that was the beginning.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, like my siblings and I would put on productions at my grandparents' house in the summertime. And I was like the one who was into performing. So I was like the director and like star.
You were the Orson Welles.
I was the Nicolas Cage.
The narcissist.
You know, I think I pursued acting because I didn't really. I remember there was a moment in high school when I was really starting to think about music seriously. And there was somebody who asked me, they're like, well, do you understand music theory? And I think that deterred me because my mind couldn't really grasp chord progressions. And so I was just like, I don't know. I honestly thought of music as like magic. And I was just like, okay, well, that's out of reach. But like, how can I continue to express myself? And I really love dissecting plays and like reading them. And
so you're still on the fence about whether you want to give up acting and do this full time?
No. You know, thanks to Colin, like I feel a lot more confident about doing this, and I get the best of both worlds. So like with the songwriting process, the lyrics are very like story driven. We only have the one song out now, but a lot of the songs that
which
I'm really proud of, From Fire,
right,
and the like Trust Fund, that one's about growing up in Pennsylvania, that one's about not having much money.
I want to get to the songwriting thing after I ask you, describe for me, how did the whole group come together?
It's kind of a long road. So like I said, we kind of knew each other in college, and
you knew he could sing?
No, I had no idea, nothing of the sort. So I left CalArts, I got a great education, but I was very deterred from music making. I was very self-conscious about my own process. I was looking around, and CalArts is the best of everybody, right? It's like the best of every town in the country coming together. So you get there, and all of a sudden, you're like, wow, I thought I was great, but this guy's super good at this, mm-hmm. and this guy's really good at this, and it deterred me from my own process because I was trying to do what everyone else was doing. So by the time I graduated, I thought I was done with music. I thought music was like behind me. I went into music management. You know, I got a job at a music management company. I eventually ended up working as a talent agent for a little bit.
Where?
I worked at a place called First Artist Management. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them. It's a small boutique composer agency for film and television composers. Mm-hmm. But I was managing another group out of college, and Matt, we put on like a warehouse show for them, and super illegal. And Matt
very fun.
Opened for the band that I was working with. And he came on stage with the producers, a guy on a computer, and like opened his mouth, and I had the same reaction you did. I just like stopped. I walked up to him immediately after the show. I was just like, dude, how do I not know this about you? You know, how do I not know you're this kind of singer? And I just said, let me take you to dinner tomorrow. It was like the next day. I was like, let me take you to dinner.
Did you have the money to take him to dinner? Did you actually have the money?
I pretended.
Yeah,
I did.
You absolutely pretended because all we got was appetizers.
And we got drinks.
That was great.
It's a very nice place. So we sat down and I said, you know, you're amazing. What do you want out of music? What is it that you need? And we both kind of simultaneously came to the conclusion that he needed live musicians because being on stage by yourself with a guy on a computer didn't feel like it fulfilled his vision.
I find this fascinating. You began to conceive what the music's going to be.
Exactly.
Not you with a synthesizer.
It was just we wanted a live band. We wanted a band because he was so dynamic on stage, and I got the sense that he was a little bit bored because he didn't have the ability to interact with people. It felt lackluster.
It was lonely, to be honest. It was a very lonely
process. If you
want to
jerk off on your own, that's acting.
Yeah. No, I mean,
a band is a group.
I mean, I'm just like used to like being an ensemble, and like it was a lonely process, and like there was a lot of times where I wanted to change something, but I didn't necessarily have the vocabulary. And now, like being in a room full of like live musicians, I can be like, it should, you know, if it could feel like this, that would be amazing. And like Danny, our bass player, can be like, oh, okay, well, what if we try? And you know what I mean? Sometimes all I can use is like imagery for that kind of stuff because I don't have the vocabulary that they have.
So the two of you go out and get who? What happens next?
So after we talk, I texted a lot of the guys who are now in the group, and I made a joke. I'm like, I'm starting a super group, right, around this lead singer. Yeah. Here's a voice memo on an iPhone, maybe a 30-second clip of him singing, right? So I texted, Daniel Zucker, our bass player, Justin Siegel, our drummer, and I was like, tomorrow, my bedroom, everybody meet, bring your instruments.
Yeah.
And the next day, they were like, yep, I'm in. Sounds great.
What was that like for you?
I was so embarrassed because they like actually enjoyed that clip enough to like come in. And I also like growing up, I didn't have a lot of guy friends. So it was like I was very, very nervous. In fact, I had one guy friend. And Colin made everything really, really comfortable. And the guys were super, super chill. But I was nervous because like I just didn't know if they were interested in the thing or if they thought something was like stupid or I don't know. I was very like on edge about the whole thing. But then like as soon as we got into the room and there was the first song written was a song called Skittles, and we just started playing it together. Colin was like, let's just jam on it. And I was like, I was like, this is it. This is like.
I've never jammed before.
I've never had. And so I don't know. It was cool. It felt fun.
So was the four.
Actually, they had a different guitar player at the time.
Interesting. How do you tell someone
we're
making a change?
It's not easy.
Especially because
he's so sweet, like a very sweet person.
I think what happened ultimately was it's nothing to do with reflection of anybody's ability or talents.
Right.
It became clear just at that point in our lives that the four of us, we were the ones who were like, this is it for us. This was kind of our all in. There was no like backup option. It was just.
Now, for a bunch of young men, where do you rehearse? Where do you write? How do you get out of the garage?
Well, we're
into the club and performing.
We're still in the kitchen. If that's any consolation. We rehearse in
my
kitchen.
We moved from a bedroom to a kitchen.
We're the bedroom band to a kitchen band.
is there another place, but in an ideal world, is there another place you should be rehearsing?
Yeah, certainly. I just
Where?
Think there's an endless amount of studio space in LA. It's just
to rehearse.
It's money.
To rehearse. It's expensive. And unfortunately, that's the process. I mean, we're pretty young as a band, and we've been incredibly fortunate. For a lot of the opportunities we received, we started out playing like the smallest bars and clubs you've never heard of, right? Like a
Where?
Couple, yeah, like the State Social House. Aww. You know what I mean?
Where?
Like in West Hollywood. Like this is all
right.
Like
yeah.
In West
How many seats?
Oh, there were none. No seats.
No.
We were playing to like a wall, and then like people were like
the
on the side.
It's literally very small, and like the
is
sound.
Is it as small
thing,
as this room?
The stage was as big as this.
Oh yeah,
the stage. Imagine like a drum kit, a bassist, a keyboard.
Yeah.
Everything was on.
And you were one of how many acts in the show that night?
Oh, that was just us.
Just you.
That was just us.
And you played for how long?
35 minutes.
35. Right.
Yeah, something like
we
that.
We did our best,
Yeah, we did.
The sound guy took a phone call in the middle of the
Yeah,
set.
Exactly.
It was amazing.
The sound guy's phone went off.
Oh, yeah.
That's why, and it's interesting to see the process, like where we started, and obviously we have a long way to go, but, we've been really lucky about, You know, like we headlined the Troubadour at some point because we got an opportunity.
How did that happen?
So we got an opportunity to open for, we played there twice beforehand.
Yeah.
You would play there a couple of times before. How do you first get into the Troubadour?
Okay, so.
Were you send them a tape? How do you get in there?
So here's what happened. Usually
they came to the shitty little club that you were in?
No. The first opportunity was our bass player played in another band, kind of local. They've since disbanded. And they were playing. And they wanted an opening act, right? They had a couple bands playing, three or four bands mm-hmm. playing. So we played then. The next time one of the acts mm-hmm. was there and saw us, him and his manager approached us because they thought we fit their style and they really liked our show. And like, will you guys be our opener? And after that show, I got in pretty close with the booker at the Troubadour, whose mm-hmm. name is Amy. She like emailed me the next day, like, hey, great show. Like, when are we booking Purta for a headlining show? And then that was it. Mm. And then from there, we did our headlining show and someone from WME came because he knew Amy really well. And she's like, you got to come check out the show. And, you know, we did a couple creative things. My roommate actually works at WME.
Right.
So he went to the A&R people secretly without right. mentioning our relationship and was like, listen, you got to cover this show. I promise you it'll be great. So they sent a couple agents who had no expectations. They're like, all right, this is some local band, whatever. And after the show, like, they all came up to me, and, you know, our agent, Ben Schiffer, was just kind of like, this is amazing. How do we talk?
Well, the reason I love this, because this is something I'm kind of obsessed with, is I'm always saying to people, like, whenever I've taught acting, they get right to the career question if we do a Q&A. They don't want to talk about lighting and films, and they don't want to talk about anything technical. They're like, how do I get an agent? How do I make it?
You know,
or their version of that. And I'll say to them, you know, be in anything. Like, you got to just put it out there. You got to play in the shitty little club that's got, like, we're just playing to a wall. You've got to put it out there, and it's going to come back to you. And if you don't, it might take some time. And if it doesn't come back to you and you put it out there, then, you know, you tried.
This is not what I wanted.
My guests are lead singer Matt Bazulka and keyboardist/manager Colin Kenrick of the band Purta. This is their song, still unreleased, The Woods on La Brea. Nobody had an eye for the big act like Ron Delsener, New York's foremost concert promoter for more than 40 years. It's a huge and poorly understood job.
I had this show at Pier 84, which was a pier that the longshoremen controlled, and I didn't really know that until they said, hey, we got to help you here. A lot of the guys there were connected. Who cares? I'll tell you about that later. When the guy dies, he's still alive.
The rest of that conversation in our archive at heresthething.org. After the break, what it's like having major label A&R court you at night, then serving lattes in the morning. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.
I'm gonna take flight off the orchard, cause I can feel it in my bones. I've got that East Coast thunder forecast in the valley of my pelvis. And I gathered my family's faith, and I gave it to me.
Trust Fund from the band Purta, which includes my two guests today, Colin Kenrick and Matt Bazulka, who are still figuring out how to overcome stage fright. This is Matt.
I do get very, very nervous, but I have this thing I haven't told anybody yet, but I like pretend like I'm walking into warm water, and that really helps me. And I always try to make an entrance, one for the theatricality of it, but like also because
the fans demand it.
Right, exactly. All three of them. It just helps me like kind of like click into place. I can fall back on the technical if I need to, but I end up always kind of after at least the first song, I always kind of get lost and like I don't know. Like I said, when I was growing up and I was performing those shows for my grandparents, it was always just such bliss and freedom. And like, and we were running amok around the house, and like all of the crafts were available to us from the basement. So we were able to make these costumes. And because the lights are in my eyes, or like, it really feels like I'm going back to like those times.
If I would do a movie, it was always like, what can I do to stay in a certain state that is symbiotic with the work I'm doing? So if I'm doing something very light, the hardest thing is to be as light and free and funny and warm and generous of spirit. So if I was doing like a comedy, I'd go in my room and I'd watch like dopey comedies on the TV. I'd watch Some Like It Hot, and I'd watch nothing to take to blow the wind, you know, my sails in any direction that was like heavy.
Right.
So that when they'd say, okay, we're ready for you, they'd knock on the trailer, they go, we're ready for you. And I'd go out, I'd be like, you know, hey, Shyamalan the ding dong, and I'm ready, you know, whatever my thing is. Yeah. And then if it was the opposite, if I was doing something really heavy and really dark, we're watching Scarface on a loop like for 9 hours all day long, to stay in that zone of like,
yeah,
you want to fuck with me? You want to fuck with me? Okay.
Yeah.
But then I want to paddle back into that current in front of the camera. So for you, you try to relax and get yourself in some zone.
Yeah, I usually spend the day like being alone. I have to like.
Interesting.
Yeah, even in New York, like the boys stayed in one house, and I got
to see you in your apartment. Like, don't come in.
Leave me alone.
Such a diva. You know when it's show day because Matt never's quiet, and then the day of the show comes, and it's just like. Silence. It's just, you know what I mean? He does not want to talk to anybody. It's like very, like you whisper to him.
He's the maestro.
He's drinking tea and like, all right.
So talk to me about songwriting. Do you have an album's worth of songs together?
At this point, we probably have an album's worth, if not a little bit more.
How many songs is an album now?
I mean, we
probably have 10, 12.
Yeah, we have more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, we probably have,
but like finished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finished, unfinished, probably the 20-something songs.
Fire? What's
from
it?
Fire.
From Fire.
You wrote that song?
Yeah, lyric and melody, not chord progression. Like, that's all these boys.
Now, why is that the song that's out there that you released in social media?
It was our, like, grooviest, most upbeat thing, which, I mean, and also, like, what I love about it now, which is not something we were thinking about at the time, but I think it is, like, the truest testament of, like, how we function as a band. So,
sure.
Like, I originally had written that on my shitty guitar and brought it, and it was a ballad. It was, like, a very Jeff Buckley, like, ballad. And for maybe the first year, we were trying to, like, figure out where that song should land. We performed it different ways, and we did the rock ballad version. And, you know, at the end of it, everybody was like, yeah, it doesn't feel right. And then I think it was
Justin,
he was like, our drummer, he said, he was like, Danny, why don't you try like funking it up? Because Danny was like, they were just jamming before rehearsal to warm up, and he was like doing some funk stuff. He's like, what if we funked up From Fire? That's the beauty of this kind of collaboration is, you know, if you listen to the lyrics aren't necessarily as upbeat as the feeling of it is. But I think that it represents how these boys and I interact and how I can trust them with, like, feelings and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at the time it was the song where it felt like everything clicked for us. You know, when you start as a band, we all have very different backgrounds musically, you know. And I think it was the one where we all kind of came together and were like, oh, this is our sound. This is what we've been kind of searching for that satisfies everybody's musical background and feels right. So when that song came together in its current rendition, it was just the one that made sense.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Justin was the one that said, funk this up and everything. So it's collaborative in that sense.
Very much so.
But is somebody the decider?
No.
It's a group. We literally had this conversation last night because, I mean, that's the beauty of being with a bunch of emotionally intelligent people is, like, our fights aren't really fights. They're conversations.
I told Justin I was going to smack the shit out of him, to be fair.
Right. And then they, like, had a huge fight, and now here.
Well, don't do that. No. Take my word for it. Don't do that.
No, we had, like, a little moment of disagreement. We're like, okay, so, like, how have we been deciding about things?
But you're functioning as a road manager for the band.
Yeah.
As of now.
Yeah, for now. I mean, since we've been doing this, I've been, you know, I'm the guy in the emails, basically.
But is there somebody who you is the goal to get somebody external from the band to take care of it?
Yeah.
That's advisable, you think?
Yeah. Initially, I mean, when we started this band, I was only the manager. I wasn't even the keyboard player. You know what I mean? I started playing keyboard, what, a year ago?
Yeah, that's an incredible thing, is he's as good as he is now and has only been playing for a year.
Justin plays what now?
Drums.
Drums. And who's the other one?
Daniel is the bass player.
Oh, bass. So you're still the keyboard.
I'm the keyboard player,
You're the one that cut the throat of the other keyboard player.
I was a manager, too, so that job came to me.
You have the big pink slips in your bag.
When we decided that, everyone looks at me, and they're like, How are you going to do this, man? So,
but you want to get, no pun intended, but you want the Brian Epstein who's on the outside.
Oh, absolutely. We're also looking for a George Martin. We're hiring a George Martin, too. So.
It comes in handy. How do you, at this stage, I mean, you guys haven't taken off yet, so to speak, but how do you integrate everybody's musicianship? Meaning, do you sit there and go, we need to give him a solo? We need to, is there
it's
a
always chance? Always chance.
Talk about each person.
I think the good thing about this band is everybody has strengths and weaknesses, but they complement each other really nicely. So there's not like, we lean on each other for those things. You know what I mean? There are certain things where, you know, I'm not as technically proficient as a lot of the guys in this band, but I'm a songwriter. Like, that's what I grew up doing. So I have a sense of how to craft songs and, you know, what
your
works.
Your knowledge of music theory is like.
And I think I work as Matt's editor. He'll write something and I'm kind of like, okay, that's great. Or like, that's too many words. Can we consolidate that a little bit? Mm-hmm. That is not enough words.
Do you agree with him?
Sometimes I will be like, I have to go with my gut on this, and he respects that. It's tedious sometimes because you get so like solidified on something, but you know, when you spend time away from it and you listen back to a rehearsal recording, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a lot of syllables.
What would you do now? Like, what would you do? Like if you could afford it financially, more rehearsal time? Is it like getting in a room and just playing and exploring together?
I think it'd be more recording time, honestly. I mean, we've been
in a nicer facility.
Well, right now we're kind of making do with what we can. You know what I mean?
Where are you recording now?
We work with a producer named Dan Weidland. Shout out, Dan.
So From Fire was recorded in his studio?
In his studio. In about 12 to 15 hours we did that. We had about
very
a day.
And you have to pay for that.
Yeah.
That's why we did it in one day. All the money.
Yeah, if we had a week, we would have made it, you know. You have an even better song.
So here's what's interesting to me. If someone dropped a chunk of money on you, you're going to go and have a nice place to record.
Right.
Is that like a dream for you to have people have the freedom? Or you all have to work, you're working, how many jobs are you working now?
I'd say 2.5.
And what are they, if you want to say?
2.5.
I do work for Starbucks. That one is probably the one I'm ready to get rid of the most. Mm-hmm. I love them. And they're a great company, but 4:30 in the morning, 5 days a week is fucking hard. Yeah.
Got to get you out of that right away.
Usual day is like 4:30 to 1. And then I work at an after-school program. It was actually one of my favorite jobs because I've worked with kids in different aspects. At the LGBT Center, I worked for 2 years in a program there with kids.
Why?
Honestly, I graduated CalArts, and there was a lot about queer culture that I was not familiar with. There was a lot of like stuff internally that I wasn't dealing with healthily, and I honestly joined that program because I wanted to.
As much for yourself.
Yeah. Honestly, just because I wanted to. It's an educational program called Community Action Network, and they go to high schools and middle schools, and they educate the kids on their gender sexuality alliances. They organize them, especially in like the lower budget schools that like no teachers.
And
are,
you
like,
felt
helping.
You weren't taking care of yourself in that regard.
No, because I was. Learning, I was learning so much. I was learning about transgender people and activists that I had no idea existed before.
When you grew up in the Lehigh Valley, was that easy or was it not that easy?
I commuted to a performing arts high school. Before then, it was I had a very difficult time making friends.
You get to the art school, they loosened up.
Yeah, and you know, and I remember I got to high school and my main like focus was just trying to make friends, and so I kind of. I was talking to my mom about this the other day. It was a little bit of like an identity crisis just because I was saying yes to everything. And like, I remember my dad when we were growing up was always playing kind of similar to Colin's dad was playing like the classics, like Bob Dylan, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And like, and I loved that music. I loved hearing it. But I also loved Celine Dion and Britney Spears and those were my things. And then I got to high school and it was like, all of my friends were listening to pop music and I did enjoy it, but I kind of like turned my shoulder on my dad because I was just like, well, he doesn't know what it's cool, you know?
And, and really, he did actually.
And I really regret it. I really regret it because but there's a part of me that feels like I'm becoming conscious again and like rehearing all this music. And like, you know, Colin will tell me somebody like that I should have known years ago and he'll be like, you should listen to this song or this song. And so the past 2 years have been a little bit of like a.
What does you call this bridge over troubled water? Is that what you're referring to this one? Oh,
yeah,
beautiful.
But I can like feel it. I like know I've heard it before, and it's because my dad. He's a great.
I'm actually glad that Matt had was raised on that. Like the
pop
music.
You can hear it, and so that's the weirdest part. Yeah. Is like when we first started singing together, I literally was making vocal choices that I was like, where is this like Guns N' Roses like vibrato coming from?
And I got that from you when you sang the rock lead, the feminine and the masculine. And what's amazing is when you sing, there's a power to you singing. Where does that come from?
It's literally my brothers and sisters. Growing up in a family of like three sisters, and I'm the youngest, and a brother who all ended up joining. joining the military. They joined for a reason. They're very aggressive people.
That was a part of your growth, too, I think. Because, like, when we started, your predisposition was to do kind of a falsetto, like a high, yeah. like higher. That's kind of what you grew up on.
Yeah.
It was pretty.
Well, I also love, like, Jeff Buckley.
Exactly. And I think it was, like, just like all of us, we had our process, and he eventually, like, when he would get lower and kind of stuck in that range, we kind of like, do that more, man.
Yeah.
Like, and then at some
both
point,
of it sounds great.
He did something, he like growled at the end. And I was like, yo, like that is, do that every song. You know what I mean? Just like sing from that area. And it's just like, it's been a growth for all of us. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just like our musical journey, his journey with discovering his voice. He's always been a great singer, but now he's really discovering his voice.
So was there a fear that if like a producer came along who was like, hey man, you're at that next show and the next person walks up that's going to carry you over the next river and Phil so-and-so walks up and says, man, you guys are great. I mean, I'm going to do my campy version of it. You guys are fantastic. I want you to call me at, XYZ Records in the morning, see? Mm-hmm. And then you call him and it's like, he's just going to fuck with your show and your thing. Are you worried about that? That people are going to go, you just change this, do this.
I mean, I think
to make it.
The nice thing is when we signed with William Morris, and we love our agents over there, is that they were kind of like, do whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. Like, we want to help with the business aspect of things, but like, your show is why we signed you. Like, we do not want any part of the creative process. And I think, I mean, I think like anything, there's a give and take. You know, I don't want us to assume that we know best because we are so young, we're doing this.
You'll take the good ideas wherever they come from.
Exactly. Right, but we'll also, we have an integrity.
There are certain aspects that we don't want to lose. You know, we're not, I mean, like, I work those 2.5 jobs, but I'd rather keep doing that than, you know, be singing songs that don't mean anything
Interesting.
To me.
Interesting. Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, we get asked all the time that, like, would you work with, you know, if we had a, you know, and not from anybody up top, but just saying, you know, would you have a songwriter come in? Do you want to have someone write your songs for you and then kind of sing them? And unanimously, we're all like, no, like,
that's just not it.
The fun part of this is that we get to write our own music. You know what I mean? Like, if we were a cover band, we could just do covers. You know, what's the point if you're not really writing your own music?
So even though if you eventually do sell out completely to make it, today, as of today, you're vowing not to. You're taking that vow today.
As of today,
you're going to throw that in the garbage, maybe, but for today. Today you're pure.
In this studio today,
recording this show, you are pure.
We have
if
integrity.
I would rather
work at Starbucks till I'm 90.
No, please. That hurts my heart.
What's the next step for you to go to the next? You have an agent at William Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they doing for you? Booking you in shows?
So, yeah, they booked us these two showcases for managers and labels. And as far as we know, people have reached out, and there's a general industry interest about us. And, you know, but at their advice, they're like, you know, we're not going to take anything right now because it's going to be a bad deal. You know, like, who knows what people are going to try and screw you over. I mean, luckily, we have a fantastic lawyer. Shout out Ken Hertz.
Yeah,
you're very good at the shout
out. Very good.
Man, you're good.
I want them to know that. I appreciate that.
You're like a congressman.
And yet,
so
I'm
going to
get texts being like, you didn't shout me out. You know, you so I think the next step for us, I think it's just more about
back to songwriting,
really getting to the heart of what we do and playing as many shows as possible.
You need time for that.
Yeah, we need more time. I mean, honestly,
you need to take a break. What's your day to day job?
Up until the end of January, I was a talent agent, and now I am doing this band full time, answering emails. And
you come from a rich family?
Oh, I wish, but I come from a very resilient family.
Yes, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to say that you know, the chance to divert toward the commercial and make a lot of money, there's nothing wrong with that. See, I disagree with you where you say, I'd rather not sing songs I don't want to sing and stay at Starbucks for the next several years, where I think I'd rather you sing things that are commercial to make money so they can do the other. So long as you stick, you pivot back to the other.
Right.
So long as you're always one for them, one for me, one for them, one for me.
It's less about saying, like, we don't mind writing something that is a little bit more, you know, four chord progression, like something a little more catchy and something, but we want to make sure that it always has like a lot of like us in it, so that it still kind of stands apart. So simplifying is not something I'm afraid of as much as like singing a pop hit written by somebody and maybe it flops and then that's out there in the world for us.
When the show, and let's assume the show goes well, you guys have a good show and you're in a nice room, you walk off stage, how do you feel when it's over? How do you feel? Are you ever happy?
It's weird. Being on stage for me is like the most electrifying feeling that you can have, you know, especially, you know, we haven't done that many shows and we're walking out on shows these days and like there's actually people who come to see us. It's not just like when you start out, it's like friends and family and all that stuff. And now we go there and there are people we've never met before saying like, you know, screaming and wanting to be there. So that's an amazing feeling. As a musician, I always get off stage and I think, you know what, I could have done this better.
You want to get up and do it again and
improve
on what
you
did.
Yeah, like, can I just go do that one part again, like, by myself on stage?
I know that. Yeah.
So, and I don't think that will ever change, and I think that's just the nature of trying to be creative and be an artist.
For you, Matthew, I mean, I'm watching you in this song. I mean, to me, there's nothing wrong with all this celebration of Freddie Mercury and Bohemian Rhapsody. But what I was excited about when I saw you was I was like, okay, well, where's the next Freddie Mercury? Rather than us sitting here... And to me, you are the next Freddie Mercury. You were like Bowie, and I want to know, are you ever satisfied?
It's the same as Colin, and we kind of bond about that fact. We walked off the stage in New York of Baby's All Right, and this one A&R rep from like SoundCloud or something drunkenly cornered me, and I was like already in a state of like, I fucked this up, and I also strained and pushed during sound check, and so I was a little raspier, and so and my mom always says, like, you're your toughest critic, but I mean, honestly, I think that's what keeps making us like better and better. Why would we not? Why would you, you know? But I mean, then we do enjoy. It's not like we sit there and we're like, that was shitty. It's like you get off and you're like, this, and this, I'm going to like focus on
for the next show. Yeah. But now let's enjoy. You know, we spent weeks putting into the show.
Hammered,
you know,
let's, you know?
I think that's, yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, by the way, where did the name come from?
Perta is actually one of my favorite plays. It's called Birdie by Naomi Wallace. It's an adaptation of a novel. And it's this bird that this boy from Pennsylvania who is battling his identity crisis of being a gay young man in
this is from a book?
A novel adapted into a play by Naomi Wallace.
And that's called?
Birdie.
Birdie.
Yeah, and the Perta, bird is the bird.
Perta is the name of the bird.
But the boy, it's really a psychological thing where he like puts his confidence into a bird, and the bird really like tells him like.
So it's like Equus, but rather than a horse, it's a bird.
Yes, and I'm Daniel Radcliffe laying naked.
Okay, that's the album cover.
Not a moment I was mad about.
That's the album cover. I love it. You naked with a bird.
Is all that gave us, and you forgot to penny pinch. You want the truth, babe. You need a bigger coin purse. It never fills, but I get dressed. To the deep end, oh, we could.
Colin Kenrick and Matt Bazalka of Perta. This is their track, Bad News Man. Perta, as you'll know by heart in a few months, is vocals by Matt Bazalka, Daniel Zucker on bass, Colin Kenrick on keyboard, Justin Siegel on drums, and guitarist Chance Taylor. Check them out at pertamusic.com. That's PERTA, or at pertamusic on Instagram. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.